Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yes, you are, and I'm Michael Sterling.
You are Michael Sterling, and I'm a Flintstone kid.
Are you?
10 million strong and growing.
Really?
Yes, that's me.
Which one?
Yes.
Which one of those kids?
I'm Bam Bam.
Bam Bam.
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yes.
And you know, right before I came here, Paul, I wrote a letter to the city of Seattle and asked them to take their weather back.
You wrote a letter to the city of Seattle?
Yeah.
You don't love this?
I love this. No, I want it to make up its mind. You know, we have this conversation for the last 3 weeks. It either rains, which we desperately need.
Yes.
We need 30
one days.
More. Yeah, but 30. We got the one.
Yeah.
We need 30 more.
We need 30 more days, yes.
To fill
the reservoirs.
Yeah.
The great design by William Mulholland.
Yeah.
You know the whole thing about how he did, like, made Los Angeles by turning most of the middle of California into ghost towns by pulling all the water from there and bringing it down? It's a great story.
Oh.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
And then it cracked. The great Mulholland Dam, not the Mulholland Dam, but the dam that gives us all our water, cracked. And it's the biggest engineering disaster in history. Killed thousands of people.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing. And he was acquitted, but it ruined him. And the one thing he said in court. He was so destroyed by it. The one thing he said in the transcript of the court thing, they asked him if he had anything to say, and he said, yes, I envy the dead.
Oh.
That's
wow.
So that's how we're starting the show here today.
You know, I must say.
There we go. Nice and cheery. There we go. It's because it's
Paul,
what I do.
That's Chinatown.
I was just going to say, the other thing that, that he did do was he named the city of Van Nuys.
Did he?
Yeah. He was up on Mulholland Drive with a friend who was.
And it was just called My Drive then when he lived
well,
there.
Well, no. He said, what do you think? You know, you're looking down into the valley. He said, what do you think? He said, Van Nuys. Van Nuys.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. It's like the Fagawi Indians. You know that story? The whole Fagawi Indians?
I think I'm going to hear it.
Stood on the edge of the cliff and looked out and I said, where the fuck are we?
Oh.
Okay. Thank our sponsors, would you, Michael?
Wow. I think we better. We'd like to
it's
thank.
It's a tough room. It's a tough room, I tell you.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar. Throw some applause their way. On the surface, this play might just appear to be a classic whodunit, but Accomplice manipulates our perceptions of who will be the perpetrator and who will be the victim with plot twists that occur with increasing frequency and velocity. Central to the action is the fact that there's an accomplice in there somewhere whose participation ensures the success of the whole criminal undertaking. We are joined today by the star of Accomplice and delighted to have her back to State of the Arts. Please welcome Alison Blanchard.
Hello, Alison.
Hello. Thank you very much.
Great to have you.
Very nice to be here.
For our State of the Arts biz feature on State of the Arts, a man who has worn just about every hat in the business of show. Among his many accolades is a 2012 NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Director of a Comedy Series. He is a member of the Directors Guild of America, Screen Actors Guild, AFTRA, and the Directors Guild Foundation. He's also a very nice guy with an invaluable perspective on our industry. Please welcome Leonard R. Garner, Jr.
Leonard.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Garner. How are you, sir?
I'm well.
Good.
So, Lenny is okay. Is it okay for the airwaves, too?
Yes, it's okay for the airwaves
okay.
as well.
Because I just don't want to, you know, just annoy you. Because I know how you get.
I think, you know, certain places I've even been known as Leo, as a matter
of fact. Leo? Well, that must be
Leo. It's a very small, very small.
Oh, we won't go there.
Very small. Okay. Very small.
So before we speak to Lenny.
Leo.
Leo,
you take care of that thing for me?
Did you take care of that thing?
The thing we did that time?
Allison.
Beautiful, beautiful.
How was your week, Paul?
My week was great. I was in Vegas.
Oh, that's right.
I went to Vegas this weekend.
You said you saw a very intriguing, amazing show.
Absinthe. was some of the most fun I've had in a movie, in a theater.
And where was this?
It was in a tent outside of Caesar's Palace. Mm-hmm. They've built a round tent. It seats 600 people, but it's completely in the round, so there's nothing more than 12 rows.
It's, wow.
And there's a bar inside, and it's just got this, like, fly-by-night traveling circus cabaret, just out of the trunk of a car type of feel about it, a real ramshackle feel about it. Just as an example, there's 600 seats. They're all folding chairs, and not one of them is the same.
Wow.
So there's 600 different folding chairs. And this guy comes out, the gazillionaire, who's got an ill-fitting tux and this greasy hair and a mouthful of gold teeth. And he's filthy and raunchy. And he's got a female sidekick who's even filthier than he is. And they just do this, like, cabaret show. And you think it's just going to be this sort of whacked kind of, you know, raunchy thing. And then they introduce, like, Cirque du Soleil quality acts. The difference being you could reach out and touch it. I mean, there's trapeze artists flying over your head. It's amazing. And it was so stunning and so Vegas and anti-Vegas at the same time. Mm-hmm. Cannot recommend it high enough. And the best part of it is the poster outside the venue, this tent, when you walk in, they've taken all the one-star Yelp reviews of people who hated the show and just listed them right outside the door. So it's this big F you to that whole thing. And there's the picture of
Very
the character
clever.
With his thumbs up. And this is the most sophomoric thing I've ever seen in my life. And they're just like, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. Just an absolute blast.
Now, how was your week? Before I tell you, did you gamble at all, you and Monica?
I don't gamble.
You don't gamble?
But your
wife does heavily, doesn't she?
She does. She's got a problem. Thanks for bringing it up. Oh, look at the time. No.
She doesn't look like she would, but, you know.
She doesn't, you know.
That's the kind they like.
But, yeah, exactly. No, I don't gamble well. I believe the adage, which is, you know, Vegas is a place where they let you hold their money. They let you look at it for a little while, and then they take it back. And the other thing, too, is I don't understand how people don't make that connection when they just walk through and they see this opulence and all of this stuff and these incredible lobbies and all this stuff. And it's like, it's your money that did all this. These are your losses here. These are all your losses. Steve Wynn, they asked Steve Wynn, the great, he has about five casinos there, and they said, is there a way to win in Vegas? And he said, oh, yeah, own a casino.
Yeah,
that's really the only way to do it, you know? Do you gamble, Michael?
You know, I certainly have been to Las Vegas all of my life. My parents were pretty hooked up there, actually, and they took us, you know, several times a year. When I was able to gamble, yeah, I kind of toyed with the slot machines and that. I was a little too, you know, unrewarding. And then I got into blackjack and roulette, which I find interesting.
Yeah.
But my dad instilled upon us to only take $40, and if you lost it, you walked away.
You were done.
If you could continue playing with it, then that was one thing. But
yeah. Well, I'm the same way with $6,000.
Your stakes are
And I walk
higher.
Away no matter what.
Yes.
But how was your week?
Well, you know, very quickly, fine. Certainly busy. I saw a new show that I'm going to talk about during the arts calendar. Love Again, a new musical by Adrian Russ and Doug
At the
Haverty.
Lonnie Chapman.
The Lonnie Chapman, which is the Group Repertory Theater. And then this evening, I'm going to see our friend, Eric Bergen.
Oh, right.
In concert at the Catalina Bar and Grill.
Who from Jersey Boys and
from Jersey Boys,
Madam Secretary.
Madam Secretary. And, of course, in Jersey Boys, the film, he played Bob Gaudio, which is the gentleman that wrote all of those great hits, most of them, anyway, for the boys. And then he also played that role in Las Vegas, speaking of Vegas, for about 3 years, and on the road in the National Company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great guy, great talent. And it's nice that he's gotten over his...
He was here with us last week. And
he's gotten over his homeliness, because he's just such a homely guy, too, that he can struggle against that.
He is a handsome dude, as Allison says.
Hysterical, too. Hysterical.
And very funny. Very funny. Very funny. So thanks for asking, but we should probably move on.
Speaking of Allison, our first guest was classically trained at UC Berkeley. She recently joined Theater 40 and is thrilled that her first role as a full-fledged member is Rupert Holmes' Delightful Accomplice, which opened last week, which we'll be talking about today. She's performed locally with Sea Glass Theater, one of my favorite theater companies in town, the production company, and ICT Long Beach. Television work includes Everybody Hates Chris and Side Order of Life, among others, and her voiceover work can be heard in Disney theme parks worldwide. Please welcome the always delightful and effervescent Allison Blanchard.
Allison, now you have to speak in one of your voices.
In one of your Disney voices.
One of your
For the
Disney
whole
voices.
Show, just do okay. Disney voices.
Well, it will be easy because my claim to fame with Disney is that I am the voice of the computer. Okay. I am their sort of go-to theme park computer voice.
Okay.
Can you
so
give
I
us
do a lot of
that?
Takeoff in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Takeoff initiated.
That's chilling.
A lot of that.
That's very Hal.
I got goosebumps.
You're very Hal.
I did.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal. Isn't
yes,
that
indeed.
Yes,
yes, indeed.
Okay, so here we are talking about a whodunit.
Yes.
That you are you're earning your money in this.
I
one.
Am
you're
earning my 99 seat money in this show. Let me tell you.
Stage,
we all know about our 99 seat kerfuffle.
They said I was a fool to dream. Yes.
Yes.
But it's a touchy thing because it's a whodunit. So we can't go into too much detail about the
yes.
synopsis or anything like that, as we almost did with the
yes.
intro that I had. The intro. Yeah. It's a little too detailed, as
yes,
they say. Yes,
I was glad that I was able to veto that intro because it's just so much more fun
right.
if you get to discover it as you're watching rather than knowing in advance
oh,
what's
sure.
going to happen.
Sure,
so,
sure.
So we're trying very hard to keep it under wraps. It's,
okay.
You can say that it's a comedy thriller.
Right.
It's sort of in the vein of Noises Off or sort of combined with Death Trap.
Like a Death Trap. Okay.
Yeah. And
the Death Trap has a lot of humor in it, too. A lot of
yes,
people don't remember
it does.
That.
But
very
it
dark.
Does.
That's Ira Levin, isn't it?
I don't know. You couldn't.
Ira Levin,
I liked that.
Me.
Very,
what's
I like Death Trap very much.
I think it was Ira Levin who wrote Rosemary's Baby. I think he wrote Death Trap mm-hmm. too.
Ah.
I'd look it up, but I got this whole thing to do.
Ask Siri. Yes. Is she
ask
around?
Siri. Well, is she here? Siri.
I think there's
she's
four.
Getting coffee now. Wait a minute. Tom Cruise's daughter is here?
Really? Put her right to work.
So.
So you're not the one to done it, though.
Can
you say
I'm not,
yes
I can't
no?
even
we don't
tell
know.
You.
We can't talk
I
about
can't
it.
I can't even tell
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that's probably the first thing you don't
yes,
want to give away.
Probably the thing.
Just to say
it. It's what I can say. You very kindly introduced me as the star, and I would have to say it's really there's four actors, and we are all in it just as much as anyone. We're
there's
all,
only four of you.
There's only four of us.
Wow. For a murder mystery, that's not a lot of people.
It is, yeah. It's a limited cast, and everybody's great. We have me. We have Michael Taylor Gray. We have Alice Cutler.
Michael Taylor Gray
was Michael just Taylor here Gray. A couple of weeks ago.
We just had him on the show.
Fantastic.
What was he?
Tiger by the Tail.
Tiger by the Tail. That's
yeah.
right. That was his last thing.
Yeah.
I saw that. I saw
Super
the last
good actor. Lovely man.
Yes,
he
lovely
is.
Man indeed. And Richard Horvitz, who is Inspector or Invader Zim. Invader Zim,
Invader.
I believe. It's a cartoon.
Okay.
He has a big voiceover fan base.
Oh, I thought that was a character name in the show.
No.
Like, and he comes in as Invader
yes,
Zim.
Invader Zim.
Yeah. the intolerant. Yes.
So, yeah, it's
you know, it's
I have to say it's very funny, and it's you will be surprised.
Okay.
You will be surprised.
Because you said four people for a murder mystery, and I always think about the classic, because I did Mousetrap,
mm-hmm.
which is like ran in London for like
yes.
75 years.
Still running,
something.
I think it's still running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the original cast. Yeah,
yes.
Sure.
Do you know they had to actually recarpet the stage?
Oh, no.
Because they had run trails with their blocking
oh, yeah.
into the carpet.
I'm sure it's been a couple. There was a diner, just to go off topic here for a second, there was a diner in Port Chester, New York, right near Greenwich, Connecticut, where I grew up, called the Texas Hot Lunch.
Uh-huh.
And it had been there for over 100 years. And the formica counter had shiny elbow spots from in between everybody, from millions of elbows being put out of this formica counter that I'm hitting the table. I'm breaking my own
You're
rule now.
You're gesticulating,
I'm
my
breaking,
friend.
I'm gesticulating here in front of everybody until
yes.
I go blind. Yes.
Yes.
So
oh.
He, but no, they did it. They said that the carpet had actually been replaced upwards of 20 times.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. because of, yeah, because, you know, yeah. you figure those traffic patterns are just sure. going to show up. You walk the same place every yep. time. Well, hmm. so, but the reason I brought that up is because Mousetrap, not a big cast, maybe 7 or 8 people. Mm-hmm. And even that is
it's a little,
lean.
Yeah.
You know, so 4 people in a murder mystery, that's a lot of work. Is it just a regular, is it a 2-act?
It is a 2-act thriller. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just can't tell you a lot more
have
than
you,
that. What I can say is it was originally produced at the Pasadena Playhouse.
Okay.
With Michael McKean and Harry Shearer.
Oh, wow.
And then it went on to Broadway with Michael McKean and Jason Alexander. This was in, it was 89 in Pasadena and 90 on Broadway.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay. So now, a company member at Theater 40 there, had you seen a lot of their work before? Did you just go in and read, or how did that relationship start?
I actually started working there 10 years ago. It's like many membership companies around town, you don't have to be a company member right. to work there. But
they go to their members first.
They do. They audition the company yeah. members first.
Right. And then like we did with Seaglass.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Company members first. If they don't find who they like within the company, they'll go outside. And that's how I first started working there with a show called Living Together, Alan Ayckbourn, in a trilogy of his called The Norman Conquests. And that was 10 years ago. And I've done, I think this is my 4th or 5th show there. And I did, you know, as we talk about the 99 seat theater madness yeah. going on right now, I joined the company finally because I thought, well, I better be a member of some company or I'll never work again.
Yeah.
So.
Well, especially too with Allison's a member of Seaglass and we're in sort of a gray area now because our artistic director moved to London, Kimberly Van
yes.
Mullen.
Mm-hmm.
So we're sort of in limbo right now.
Well, I can take over that role.
Would
yes.
you?
Yes.
Great.
Fabulous.
That would be great. You have so much free time.
Exactly. Sure. Nothing really to do.
No, but that should not stop you. You could maybe do both, right?
Well, normally I would actually consider that. It's just now with the UCLA gig, I got the...
Oh, that's right.
And that's very... So, it's becoming a real-time vampire.
Maybe Jimmy Denton will take that.
Yes, yeah, because he's got so much free time, too.
He's just counting the
Jimmy,
money on his
Jimmy
way to the
Denton.
Bank.
I've heard Jamie called a lot of things, but never Jimmy Denton.
Wow. Well,
Jimmy
you've
Denton
heard
makes
it today.
Yeah, it makes him sound like a Saturday morning cartoon character.
Yeah.
And coming up next, yeah. Jimmy Denton.
And he has that hair, like
yeah,
right, big boy
like
hair.
The big boy.
Yeah,
there
you right. go. So audience involvement on this play, Allison, or no?
Just observing.
Okay.
Just observing.
That's good.
I
get
yes.
nervous.
Like,
there's I get no, nervous
yeah,
with audience
I had another friend who called me and said, we have to participate
yeah,
in this thing.
It's like scary.
I said, no, you're just watching. You don't have to do anything. No pressure on the audience, really,
but thank
except
you
to
for,
attend.
But thank you
attend.
For being so enthused.
Yes. Thanks a lot.
We are talking about Accomplice, which opened last week, May 14th at Theater 40. And the show times are Thursday through Saturday at 8 with the Sunday matinee at 2. And does this say Monday at 8 as well? Is there a
no,
Monday?
We in the past we have done Monday night shows, but this run we are not doing Monday night
shows. Oh, okay.
Shows.
All right. And admission, $26. Can't beat it. Students with ID and members of performing arts unions are $13 on a standby basis. Reservations, 310-364-0535, or you can get online ticketing at www.theater40.org. Theater has the R-E spelling. We will throw this information out a couple more times before the end of the hour. And this is on the campus of Beverly Hills High School, right?
Yes, it is.
And I never heard the answer to that question. Is that
Beverly Hills 90210?
Is that where they filmed it?
Leonard, do you know the answer to that?
Do you know the answer to that?
I have no idea.
Uh-huh. There we go. Leo doesn't know.
Leo doesn't
yeah.
know. But why would he?
Well, because he might have directed,
an episode of it.
He might have been on it himself.
That's
knows,
true.
You know, right?
That's true.
But I don't. Allison and I concluded we don't think so. Or at least I concluded
I
that.
I think
yeah.
not, but
yeah.
I...
It,
I
the
say,
aerial
I never
shots,
watched the
yes.
show.
Oh,
yes.
okay.
But I think it was done actually out here somewhere in the valley.
I found... Likely. What is the... They split the high school for
could
Greece,
very
I remember.
Much... This school right here, some parts of it.
Notre Dame?
Notre Dame on the inside because they have those long hallways and all of that.
That look that could
yeah,
be any...
Could be
I know that the exterior of Venice High School, the front of it, was used for Greece.
Yes.
But the back of Hollywood High School was used for the when they have their big fair at the end.
Right,
so they
exactly.
use both of those.
Yes,
schools.
With the foothills in the background.
Yeah.
Our foothills, yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of that, we just had one of their cast members.
Barry Pearl.
The hysterical Barry Pearl.
Very funny.
And
Barry
what's
Pearl.
His show that's going on this weekend?
It was. I did see it.
13,
which
yeah.
I talked about last week. Yeah. And Jason Robert Brown's 13, the musical, with actually all teenagers who are in that neighborhood of 13.
Wow.
And charming. So it looks like that's going to perhaps come to fruition on a longer run.
There or another?
Possibly at the same theater at the El Portal.
Yeah, really?
Possibly.
And they were on the main stage or in that form?
On the main stage.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I missed that.
Yeah, well, you can see it when it comes back.
I'm anxious to see Kristen Towers' role show that's in there, Violet.
Violet.
Which is the next thing going
right,
in there.
Which is yeah. the regional premiere of that show, which is odd to me that a small theater, a 99-seat theater, got the rights to do that. But they did.
No, I like her work.
Great work.
Here's what we have to work on, Alice. How are we going to get you to play Lady Bracknell? And how long has the every bio I read of yours always ends that way? She will play Lady
One
Bracknell.
Day.
Yes.
Well, and I have a good friend, Gary Ballard, who emails me every year and says, "How's that going? Working on
well,
that?"
Well, you should explain to our listeners what that is.
Lady Bracknell is the famous character from The Importance of Being Earnest. And
a handbag.
One day, I was born to play her. I know that someday I'll do it.
And did you ever get close? Did you ever audition for it?
I have never auditioned for it.
Oh.
They did it at Theater Banshee a couple of years ago.
Oh, right.
And they
Magnolia
used
there.
A man.
Which a lot of places do.
Which a lot of places do, and I strongly disagree. And I,
as you would, wanting to play the role yourself.
Wanting to play the role myself. And then I had about four different friends email me the breakdown when A Noise Within did it.
Right.
But I was a little bit under the age range.
Okay.
And I did submit, but they did not call me in. So,
and that's going to be a no pressure audition for you when you actually get.
No pressure at all. Yes, no pressure.
Why don't you get your colleagues there at Theater 40 to?
You know that
this?
Is a possibility.
Yeah? Yeah.
That is a possibility. I don't know that they've ever done it, and why should we not?
Absolutely,
it's one and
one day.
One day. There's always self-producing.
As God
right?
is my witness.
I will play.
I
Lady,
will play Lady Bracknell.
It's two characters in one.
It's yes. a ridiculously funny show, though. In the
yes.
the top five shows of comedy, they always have these lists of like you know your movie things. You have the top five movies, and you know. But in terms of plays, it's always listed
yes.
As one of the most just brilliantly
well, it's just
funny.
The writing is spectacular. The characters are brilliant. It's really you'd think you know slam dunk like Midsummer Night's Dream.
Right.
It's really one of those ones that you can guarantee that you're going to get full houses and, you know.
Did you ever read any of Oscar Wilde's fairy tales?
No, I did not.
He wrote fairy tales, too, that are just, they make Grimm's fairy tales look like a walk in the park.
Oh, really?
They are so dark and
wow.
so, they're beautiful, but they're so off-putting.
Are they scary for a child?
Not scary, but just so tragic. There's one called The Nightingale and the Rose, where this nightingale, this man is trying to get this woman a red rose to prove his love, and there are no red roses to be found. So this nightingale observes this. And the nightingale hurls itself into the thorn on the rose bush so that it will bleed into the white rose and give a red rose to her. And he gives it to her, and the woman throws it into the street. And I didn't really want a red. And the bird's dead and everything. It's just like,
wow.
My. You don't,
well.
You don't leave humming a tune after that one, let me tell you.
He had a very dark imagination.
He did.
That sounds like a premise for a TV series. Because, you know, they have that TV series Grimm. Isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
They're wonderful. And so few people knew. And the other thing, too, he was writing it during the whole time when he was arrested and undergoing. All the,
yeah.
you know, for homosexuality and all that. So,
it's not a happy time.
Occupying a space in his head, yeah. We should do our arts calendar, Michael.
Yeah.
Let me find that and kick that off, and we'll move ahead with that. If I had it here somewhere. Oh, here we go. Michael, would you kick it off on
well,
my
I
behalf?
Well, I will. Thanks. As I said at the beginning of the show, ladies and gentlemen, I took in some theater this past week, and it is a new musical called Love Again. With a book by Doug Haverty, music by Adrian Russ, and lyrics by Adrian Russ and Doug Haverty, and directed by Kay Cole. You know who Kay Cole
is. I don't know.
One of the
Cole.
Original company members from A Chorus Line.
Oh,
Broadway.
Yes.
Played the role of Maggie on the created that role, but she certainly has many Broadway credits. I think she started actually in Bye Bye Birdie with Barry Pearl.
Oh, really?
On Broadway, the two of them as youngsters. And she's a wonderful director, and this is a musical that kind of harkens back to another time when musicals were written in a very differently than they are written today. Mm-hmm. Much more on the classic side of musicals. And with a very, very uncomplicated, yet very interesting and very emotionally available score and story. It's a story. There are three different stories about three different relationships.
Okay.
Where love becomes questionable and they go through the paces of finding it again, you know, with one another. The last of those three was something that touched me personally because it involved the grandparents of the young family that was involved here, and both of them having, the mother and father having Alzheimer's.
Oh, okay.
And to the point where they weren't recognizing one another. And through a series of very delicate, you know, maneuvers and things in the dialogue and musically as well, enabled them to, the family to come up with an idea that they thought might put them back together again.
Okay.
And totally fall in love all over again. And that's exactly what's happened.
Right.
I just gave the ending away.
Now, is it separate tales or are they intertwining?
It's separate tales. Yeah.
Okay, separate so tales. It's like three little vignettes.
But it is a cast. The company is quite involved, and whether they're involved all the way through each story. But I want to do a shout out to all of them because they really put their time and energy into this. The very charming Michelle Bernath, Paul Cady, Kathleen Shen, Amy Gillette, the lovely Renee Gorcey, Lloyd Peterson, Lauren Peterson, Andrew Curtis Stark, Debbie Tinsley, Elijah Tomlinson, and Janet Wood. That is the company of this this lovely musical, which, as I said, for me sitting there in the audience and seeing that last one, because my father passed of Alzheimer's just a couple of years ago, and my mother has it now. So it touched a particular nerve for me.
But, oh, I would imagine yeah. So, yeah.
But I recommend seeing it. It's now through June 28th, Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m. at the Group Rep Theater, which is the Lonnie Chapman Theater, as Paul said earlier. Reservations and information, 818-763-5990.
Okay. World champion Randy Gardner breaks the ice and the silence in Go Figure, the Randy Gardner story, his first ever one-man show that reveals the rough-and-tumble world behind the beauty and elegance of competitive ice skating. He also takes us down the path of his own shocking and surprising story on his way to winning the world championships in pairs ice skating. Experience this exciting world as never revealed before by those who actually lived it, from Moscow during the Cold War through the jaw-dropping scandals of the 1990s to the present.
That's right. Go Figure. Should I take
that? Yeah, please do.
Go Figure impales the sacred ice skating cows without reverence while taking us back to the glory days of the Olympics. Nothing is off limits in this raucous tell-all where at every turn of the blade and for the first time in history, the skates come off and the truth comes out. Go Figure plays through June 14th at the NoHo Arts Center, 11136 Magnolia Boulevard, North Hollywood. And for tickets, you simply visit NoHoAce.com or call 818-508-7101.
I thought this would be right up your alley.
Well, Randy was a client of mine. We did many tours of skating in proscenium theater shows. Proscenium
really?
Theater shows in some of the great theaters in the country. Yeah.
And
his partner, Ty Babylonia.
And Ty Babylonia, who we had on the show.
Yes, and yes. Ty and Dorothy Hamill will actually be there this weekend introducing the show to the audience. And it's the first time, interestingly enough, I'll just add this quickly, that part of the story is that, you know, in all the years that Ty and Randy skated professionally together, I think all of us remember that. I'm not sure about the younger set of people that are listening to this show, but greatest, you know, some of the great champions, their loss or inability to compete at the Olympics in the 11th hour when they were actually warming up on the ice to do that final routine, because they were America's sweethearts. Randy slipped, he fell. He injured his groin, and they could not participate. So all those years of training leading up to that one moment in time, strangely enough, ruined something between them emotionally. It was
really?
A difficult time for them, and which carried on through now. This is what's talked about in this book.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
And it was never talked about during their relationship.
Interesting.
But strangely enough, they became possibly bigger stars than they could have had they gone into the Olympics and won it as America's favorite.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because the whole world fell in love with them, and the whole world saw this happen to these
right.
two innocent, the young, beautiful
collective
people.
Empathy. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
so,
it's very, very true.
Strange things happen in a, you know, things happen in a strange way, I should say, sometimes.
Michael, would you introduce this gentleman to my right
pleasure.
Here and welcome him to our show?
With pleasure. Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, was born in Baltimore, Maryland, raised in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and attended Syracuse University. Earned his Bachelor of Science degree in 1974 from the School of Dramatic Arts. He moved to Los Angeles, California in July of 1974, was accepted into the Assistant Director's Training Program in August of 75, and became a member of the Directors Guild of America in 1977. Over the past 38 years, he's worked as an assistant director, stage manager, a production manager, an actor, and director. His directing credits include The Soul Man, which is one of my favorite shows right now. I love watching that silly show. Guys with Kids, Let's Stay Together, Working Class, Rules of Engagement, another favorite of mine, News Radio, ditto, Just Shoot Me, ditto, the Hughleys, Becker, Wings, love that, and literally dozens of more television shows, films, and creative projects. Please welcome Leonard R. Garner, Jr., who we have the pleasure of calling Leo.
Yeah!
There he is. Okay, first tell them that you who you are in the Blues Brothers, because that's my favorite story.
I am the lobby guard who the Blues Brothers run up to after barricading themselves in the Chicago Cook County Courthouse, and they ask me where the offices of the county assessors are, and I tell them.
Yes, right.
And then all the cops come running up and ask me if I saw two guys with suitcases, hats and glasses, and I say, yes, I just sent them down that way. And I was also the second assistant director on that show.
What was it like to be involved? I mean, that had to be – that is one of the most massive I mean, at that point in time, I think it was the most expensive comedy that had ever been filmed.
Without a doubt.
It was.
Without a doubt.
It was something like $40 million in 1980.
Interesting story. When we left Universal Studio, me and the first AD, we had a budget of around about $10 million, $12 million. And as soon as we got to Chicago and we really started scouting locations, because the script would say things like, it, such and such would happen, and it would say, and the police cars gave chase. It would just be a one-line thing.
Right.
And there were several of those, obviously. And when we got to Chicago and we started scouting everything and looking at, you know, what this chase would involve and where it was, it went immediately like $30,000 right there. I mean, $30 million right there.
Really?
So it was very incredible.
No, it was. It was just, you know. And
all the stunts are real. There's about three CGI effects in the movie, maybe four. And they're very, very early CGI, and but everything else was done real.
Real? They're actually doing CGI.
There was one when she blows up the front when Carrie Fisher takes that bazooka or rocket launcher. Right. And blows up the front of the hotel where the guys are staying near the L track.
Right, right, right.
When that thing dissolves, that was kind of done in a CGI effect.
Okay.
Could you explain what CGI is for our listeners who don't know?
Well, I forget exactly what they call it. Computer-generated imagery.
There you go. Yeah.
But, you know, now everything is almost done that way. I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but I want to see the new Mad Max because everything in that is pretty much real.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Oh, really?
It's not CGI. Okay.
Yeah. All the stunts and that stuff are done. Yeah.
Wow. No, you know, so we have this thing that we started doing on the show called State of the Biz instead of State of the Arts to have people like yourself on, Lenny, who have such extensive experience in this. And we have a lot of actors who listen to our show, and we try to give them tips. We have casting directors on. You and I met because we were at the Collegetown Film Festival run by Eric Zudak at Penn State, and we spoke to actors there. We're on a couple of panels. But you have a special perspective on set protocol. call and things like that. And I was curious if, in working with actors, if there's one thing or a couple of things that you see repeatedly that you never want to see again. Like, if there's a particular behavior or something that we could share with people, like, what never to do on a set? What is, like, the most inappropriate thing to do, or what really indicates that you're a rube who hasn't been there before?
Well, it varies. There are things that, you know, particularly because I've done a lot of sitcom work, that's, you know, pretty much my valley work. I've done a bunch of other things, but I really enjoy that. Number one is, if you have got the job, you know, accept that and relax into it. I did a pilot for the show called Girlfriends, and there was a particular actress on the show who actually worked her way out of the show.
She
did the pilot. She completed it, but she was not brought back. And part of it was she wanted to keep – she broke it all the way down. You know, what she had come in with, what had gotten her the job, she just – lost it, kept breaking it down, kept wanting to doubt it or say, well, should it be more this, should it be more that? It's just like, you know, you've got it, you had it, leave it alone. You know, I'll help you if I want more, if we need more, we'll get to that point, but you don't need to start tearing it
apart,
overthinking it.
She worked too much.
Way too much.
And just dissolved the, didn't trust her own instinct enough to.
Lost her instinct, unfortunately.
Right. Wow.
Do you know if she has gone on to...
She's working now, yes. She's working.
Oh, good for her. Maybe she found
it. I don't know. It was just an odd situation, and it was very difficult. I have seen another incident, which is where if... And I understand, you know, insecurity. Everybody has that, you know, particularly when you're... And particularly when you're working in television or a sitcom or where you're working around other people that are already there or sort of have... A family feel, right, or a level of communication, and you're coming in, and sometimes someone can be trying to give you a little criticism or a little bit of trying to change something, and you can take that the wrong way or feel you're being attacked. I've seen that happen,
right,
and had to pull people aside and say, look, this is not what this is about right now.
Oh, you mean actors telling other actors?
No, or? Just actors taking even notes from a director and taking it into a personal level that it's not about that at
okay.
this point. You know, and I'm not criticizing everything you've done. I'm talking about a specific thing right now that I want or that I need in that area.
So you're saying actors are sensitive people.
Well, so are directors. I mean, everybody can be sensitive.
Right.
The thing about the sitcom media in particular is everything is happening very fast.
Yeah.
And, you know, you think that you have the pleasure of having your script over the weekend before you start or 2 days before you start. I've been in those situations where I've been a half an hour before the table read and the script has gotten there.
Wow.
And so then you're trying to figure out what's happening while it's happening right then at the table read or not. And, you know, your regular cast, if you're a guest cast player, if you're a couple of line player coming in there and you're around the table, if the show's been going for a while, everybody else has their rhythm. They know what's going on.
Right.
And so it can be daunting if you really think about it, about trying to fit in to this rhythm, but then on the other hand, you have to trust, well, I got cast in here, so there must have been something I was doing, and you just try to have to fit into that, knowing that you have the rest of that week to develop it, if you have a week. Nowadays, most guest players only get a day.
Right.
They might bring you in.
Now, right. I've had it suggested to me that should I be invited to a table read, which I have not yet been, that I, you know, if you're one of those minor players, I've had it suggested to me, don't go. Don't go to the table read, even if they invite you, because you can lose your job at the table read.
I was actually going to ask you that. How common is that? How common is people losing it after the table read?
Well, look, I think that most of the time it's not that common. I do think that if you're a day player or not, half the time you're not going to be invited. But I would say if you're invited to table read, I would do it. I would always do it.
Well, why wouldn't you? If you've gotten that far, why would you want to?
Well, because she's had gives an opportunity to be reevaluated and cut.
Well, true, but I mean, is it an option for the actor to say yes or no?
Well, here's the big thing. First of all, as important as a table read is, and pardon my French, but you really had to suck. desired at the table read, I would think.
That should be a sound biter.
If you can't, because if you can't read.
The really next big thing is the thing is the first run through. Mm. That's right. When the heads usually is going to roll. If you're not funny at that first run through, or you're not happening, and that can be the producer's run through because they want to have it right by the time there's a network run through. It's a little more dangerous because sometimes, depending on the show and depending on how many that particular director is doing of the episode, I might not be in casting when you're cast. Might have looked at something on tape of it, maybe not, but sometimes I'm not on casting, so the first time I see you is at the table read, or if it's a your day player, the first time I see you is maybe that Wednesday, that Tuesday or Wednesday. And so sometimes I have been in a situation where I've seen someone and I'll see what they do and I'm thinking to myself, And then later the producer will come down and they'll look at me and after run through they go, well, can you do anything with them? I said, well, what did they show you at the read? What did they show you when they read in the first place? Because I didn't get to see that and I've tried some things here that don't work. But usually that's still pretty rare. I think usually it's pretty rare.
It must be very difficult, though. You know, even for someone that's being written into a show that gets hired to be a part of that ensemble that's been working maybe even a couple of years while the show is on the air. I notice you've directed a lot of those types of things, and currently with Soul Man, it's quite an ensemble little group of people there. But coming in as a new character and trying to fit into that family, boy, if you don't stake your own ground and have your own place, it could be
it's
rough.
It's very much
you,
the same
right?
for a director, however, as well, because half the time there are shows where one director does all the episodes. There used to be more, but the majority of the shows now don't have one director that does them all. Wow. And so there's times when you're walking into that whole situation.
What is the reason exactly for that they wouldn't
I think sometimes it's to allow... sometimes it's a lot of producers a little bit more control.
Right.
And sometimes it's to just change up the rhythm and bring something different to the cast and make sure, you know, just change the rhythm of what's happening on the stage.
I find on some of these shows, it looks to me almost like, I see this on Modern Family quite often, that because there's all these interweaving storylines on that, sometimes it looks as though you can see a B-unit director's work. Like, you could see that it maybe was directed by two different people because the styles change so much. It's like sometimes they'll have a really silly storyline and then they'll have one that isn't. Is that ever the case?
Well, one director would direct the entire episode.
Yeah.
But each director theoretically has may have a little bit of a different style. I mean, obviously in television, a director... The opportunity to bring the most to a show is if you do the pilot, or if you do the pilot or you do the first couple, the first season or half a season, because you're setting, you know, thematically.
Yeah, you're helping to define the style.
Everything about it. But after that, for example, if you go to do CSI, any show, once you go to do a show, there's only so much you can do. You know, you're working with the actors, you can change, get some alternative angles or try to do things a little differently, but the theme, the look, all of the show is set already. So if you go in there trying to do too much, it's not going to work.
Right. It's interesting because I always think about, I've done a number of day player things, and it's like you are nervous going in because you're the new kid on the block. And I'm trying to imagine how that nervousness must be when you're a director. Yeah. So you not only are the new kid on the block, but you're also in charge of helming the ship. How do you deal with that? Do you struggle with nervousness in that?
Initially, yeah. I mean, when I started directing, actually it was on a show that I had been an assistant director on, so I sort of had a segue into the show.
Sure.
And I think the first episode I did, the cast and everybody was pulling for me. And then after about the second or third show, they're like, okay, you know, you're the director, we're gonna just be us, we're gonna be real. And so that developed, but then when I actually started directing other shows, that was really a challenge at first. And you do walk in there. The good thing for me, I had worked in the business long enough that I knew a lot of different crew people and assistant directors, and sometimes they would pull me to the side and say, hey, this is how this works here, or this is how this goes here. But it is. It's a learning. It's just learning to walk into a room and try to take in, watch what's happening, take in what's happening. The first thing is at the table read, a production meeting table read, trying to figure out where the real power is, who's got the decision, where this is coming from, and absorb that, and then.
And would that include also the, without naming any names certainly, but you know the whoever the star or main stars is of what you're coming in to direct, if any of if either one or the other or more have an attitude with regard to the fact that they are the star and they think that they are running the show themselves, does that
That can happen occasionally. I mean, I did a show and one of the stars in a show, very well known. Actor, I won't mention his name. I love him to death. We worked out well, but I had a scene. I had a two-people scene that we were rehearsing, and it was the first day working, and I must have spent, and in sitcom world, you know, you really don't spend, you want to run a scene maybe three times, maybe four times the first time just to get it going, get a feel for it, walk. And I went through this scene. I don't know. It seemed like it took 35 minutes or so.
Wow.
And we never, it was never argumentative. We tried different things. We did different things. It wound up going the way I wanted it to go. And I realized it was his way of kind of testing me.
Hmm.
But I didn't. We didn't get contentious. In that case, there was no reason to get contentious about it. I just kind of went. When it was over, the assistant director came to me and says, man, you handled that beautifully. It was really good. And from that point on, everything else worked really
right.
well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's different ways that it can happen.
Did you ever work with Joan Collins?
No.
Ever want to?
No. Well, the other thing is, you know,
Well, we got her right here. Joan, come on in.
I do like doing comedy, and I do find that comedy is a much... usually comedians are used to working a little bit more ensemble.
Yeah.
You know, and there's an energy thing that's happening on the set where if it's going good, it's just it propels itself almost. And if you can give little things, I really enjoy it when you just give a little thing to somebody. And then they're off and gone.
Right.
That's what makes
light
it so
the fuse
much fun.
For them. Yeah.
Well,
we got three.
We do,
and a half minutes
to baptize you.
Both of you. Final section where we ask people to share a tale of woe, a tale of embarrassment, something that went south. Alice, do you have one for us?
I do, and it's actually from Accomplice, and I think
okay.
I can share it without giving too much away. On our preview performance. Our main set is a living room set with a front door and a kitchen door and some stairs going up. At one point, I was messing around with the front door, and I accidentally flipped the lock, and then I left the stage through the kitchen door. And the next actor's supposed to open with a key, but of course, you know, on stage the keys don't work.
Right.
He's supposed to open that front door and come into the house, and I heard him rattling the door, and I'm real super fast through my head. I'm like, what happens next? Can I fix this? Can I save him? And I ran it through the kitchen door and opened the door. I fixed it. I saved it. I got him in the house. It was fine. I stepped onto the stage a nanosecond before the stage manager. He was just about to run out there to unlock the door.
And this was one of your opening weekend performances.
This was our one, we had one preview for this show, and that was our one preview performance. But my husband was in the audience, and he said he did not know that was not supposed to happen.
Well, there you go.
So
there you go.
It worked out fine. I just, you know, I had the Rolodex in my head, like, what happens next, and can I do it? And yes, okay, I can.
That what if?
Nothing will mess up if I go on stage now.
What if spiral. How about you, Lenny?
Well, you know, I'm working with a very well-known actor, and there was a quick change room on the stage, and I had
you can't
note
tell us
to
that
give
name,
him. I don't want to tell him. But he's a lovely man, and he's still working. And you know, I'm like, hey, I got a note for you. He said, no problem. Just stick your head in here. And I stick my head in there to give him the note, and he actually had a bucket there that he was urinating So I gave him his, he goes, no, give me the note. I gave him his note, and you know, he took the note very well.
How gracious you were.
Multitasking at his best.
My word.
Well, that's funny because I was in a show.
You got to go. You got to go.
Where, exactly. I was in a show where I couldn't leave the stage to urinate because someone had locked the door. Still a hybrid there. You see what I did there?
I see
just
what you did there.
Just took both there.
Holy cow.
We are so delighted to have both of you here. I want to throw the information out there again for Accomplice. This is open last weekend. Actually, Michael, do you have it there?
I do, yes. It runs the 14th of May, which is in progress now, through June 14th. Regular showtimes Thursday, Saturday at 8 p.m., Sunday at 2 p.m., and Friday, May 15th performance. Oh, that's already passed. We don't need to talk about that. Admission, $26. Students with ID and members of performing arts unions, $13 on a standby basis. Reservations, 310-364-0535. And online ticketing, theater40.org.
And we will have a review of it next week because I'm going to see it on Saturday. I'll
Fantastic.
Be there for Saturday night.
Lovely.
Leonard, a pleasure having you on as well.
Yes,
always
sir.
A pleasure.
Thank
yes,
you
sir.
Very much.
Please
pleasure
let us know what you have happening and please come on again and share your tales with us because we always enjoy having
Absolutely. And Love
folks.
Again playing at the Lonnie Chapman Theater, group rep theater in New York, North Hollywood.
It's worth the drive.
Yes,
it really is.
818-763-5990 for tickets on that one. Have a delightful evening of theater. Thank you, Allison. Thank you, Leo.
Oh, thank you.
For joining us, and thank you, Paul.
Such a great time. Michael, as always.
Absolutely. See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle right here on LA Talk Radio.